All right, thank you so much for showing up and braving the weather. We were hoping to be outside, but here we are anyway. It's kind of more focused, so that's okay too. This is Marissa Soba, and I have multiple names. I was born Walter E. Harris III. My family nicknamed me Buddy, which some people know me by. And then as I got on a spiritual path, I have another name called Monk, so I use that when I read poetry and such like. But anyway, I'm going to read some poems. Marissa's going to play some music, and it's going to be a little journey. So thanks for listening, and we're going to start off just with the singing bowl. Get started, I have to tell a little story because that's part of why we're here tonight. Basically, like two things I find that are helpful in guiding me in life are staying connected with the earth, because everything, the cotton in the shirt and the tea that I'm drinking, the herbal tea that I'm drinking, everything comes from the earth. And then the mysterious spirits that we can't really see. So about, I don't really remember, but maybe 30, 35 years ago, I heard a little voice, I don't know, it was in my head or what, but I heard a little voice say, when 60, learn the cello. So somehow I remembered that, and then a few years ago, I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna turn 60. And then just as my birthday happened, I never bought anything on eBay or anything like that. I got online, and I found someone like 2 or 3 minutes away from me that had a cello, and I bought it. And I tinkered with it for like a year or so, I don't remember. And then I was helping Janet publish her book, and she's like, oh, I started taking cello lessons. And I'm like, really? And that's how I met Marissa. So I've dabbled in it, I've slacked off, but it's nice to be able to share and play with her and get to hear her.
Thank you. So.
I gotta say as much, I feel like it was meant to be.
Yeah, it sounds cliche, but a lot of times it's true. So I don't know if I'm supposed to keep learning. I think I have to keep learning a little bit how to play, but anyway. all right, we're going to do like a series of I'm going to read, she's going to play, and then like that. So the first, not every poem has a story to it, but the first poem does. When I was in my teens and having a hard time dealing with life, my dad sent me to see a family friend, a dear family friend, who was quite the storyteller. So he told me a story. He had a knack for making a story go on and on, which I won't do the whole story. But the gist of it was a guy like came to him and said, "I don't know, life's rough. I'm thinking about suicide." And he said, "Well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? Have you ever done this? Have you ever, you know, something?" It just went on and on for like 5 minutes. And by the end of the story, the guy says to him, "You know what? You made it impossible for me to ever take my own life." So that story stayed with me, and it turned into this poem. I don't know, a bunch of years ago I wrote it. And it's called "You Are Not Alone," Song of Saul. There is edible asparagus and crisp lettuce and thick, soft heads of broccoli and a strawberry dimpled and juicy and a sunrise you haven't yet seen. And tongue and groove pine walls varnished and the smiles of birds and dolphins. And friends who are there even when you can't see them. And the invisible aromas of flowers. And roads lined with trees and dreams. And someone you've always wanted to love. And always a home where you stand. Now this one, pretty self-explanatory. The title goes right into the poem. The Nobel Peace Prize goes to a child in Iraq, a sparrow in Detroit, a polar bear, a wildflower, the one cell in a warmonger's brain that is peaceful. A chunk of ice floating away from the top of the world. The soldiers who have held their gunfire. The soldiers who have left the war. The soldiers who refused to become soldiers. A sparrow in Afghanistan. The Myanmar monks. The original Australians. A Darfur grandmother, a Hopi grandfather, a Taoist, a true Christian, the funniest Jew you've ever heard. The Shakers, the Quakers, the pacifists, the half-baked weed smokers, the devotees of Walden Pond, the whirling dervishes, the drunk in the alley who has only damaged his own knuckles against the cold brick wall in the heart of winter. A fool in a field, in the middle of anywhere, who is feeding a sparrow with one hand and waving a white flag with the other. This one was written a while ago too. When I visited Arizona many years ago, in Flagstaff, there's four peaks that are sacred to the Navajo, otherwise known as the Diné. And I was traveling, and like one of the best nights sleep I ever had was at the Diné people's home off the reservation in that house. I guess it was surrounded by the four peaks, but it was so comforting. And then it's still a hot area, hotbed topic, because I think they have put in they made a man-made snow bowl with water from sludge, and it's rather disgusting. And these are sacred Navajo Diné mountains and lands. I wrote this poem, and I think of it nowadays too around here, because more and more we see like Amazon knocking down trees to build another warehouse, and a lot of the mining that's done. A lot of lithium habitats are being destroyed to give lithium for electric cars, which are supposedly green, but it's not really green if you're destroying habitat. So this poem is all a question. How do you explain sacred? How do you slake the doggish thirst of a summer parched tongue? How do you describe water to a newborn child? How do you explain sacred to a developer, colors to the blind? How do you tell the inchworm of the miles journeying to the tops of the peaks, of the four peaks? How do you speak of indecision to the mountain lion who feels the spirit of timeless eons in his very paws? How do you explain sacred to a developer? How do you explain home to a transient? This one requires a different hat. Now, this is a series of poems I've gotten into that's called One Man's Mythology. So it's kind of whimsical, and sometimes I think we're very left-brained about trying to solve things, and we need to come at it from another angle. So mythology is one way. But this is One Man's Mythology, number 8. The difference between a top hat and a dove, according to one man, is the color. Many men, who are really one man multiplied, wear no top hats at all, while only a few men who have forgotten one man control the making of top hats. When a dove needs a place to rest, one man puts his top hat upside down on the ground. One man has no top hat, but doves land at his feet. One man is missing the top of his top hat. But this is by design, because it allows his thoughts to fly to heaven like doves. Solo. See, I gotta introduce Marissa too. I'll read her little bio. She's an active musician performing and recording music in the tri-state area in Long Island. In between performances, she teaches violin, viola, and cello right down the road at, what's the name of?
Advantage Music
in Ronkonkoma. She's the owner and operator of Long Island's premier music entertainment company called the Blue Moon Music Company. And I also have to thank the library too for letting us do this. And let's see, we're up to the second one. Okay. This poem was written in April. I was doing some stretches on the floor, and it was like still chilly, too cold to go out, but there was so much sunlight. So like the contrast just started the poem. It's called What to Do with Light in Early April. Oh yeah, also I want to mention the for Native people, from Native people's perspective, I learned that the first thunder, what they call the thunder beings, the first thunder in spring is like a wake up. It's like wakes up the earth and the insects. So every spring, usually I keep track of when in April, but that's like when you hear that first thunder, it's like the season is has started. What to do with light in early April? What to do with light in early April? Indoor chilly, early evening winter's cabin fever faded. Sky as blue as a robin's egg. All that April light glowing the glass windows. Outside a common grackle squeaks and whistles. Earlier in the day, woodpecker doing his thing again. Mint making the way above the surface of the earth again. Each day on my knees, smelling the prayers of hyacinths. What to do with all that light in early April, coming out of the cave of the mind, where you weathered the winter as if you were the only one. Last night, the thunder beings woke the sky and woke the earth again. Putting everyone on notice, time for being awake, for caring for the earth again. Not just your little patch of yard or pot of soil or wide expanse. Everyone put on notice, time to feel the light again. Time to let light in again. Breathe light in and spin light out into the softening soil and all who course this journey hungry for love again. Hungry for the healing laughter that banishes the darkness of disrespect. Trust your feet and all your senses. What to do with light in early April again. Now this one's a little edgier. I write kind of somewhat amount like political type of poems, but I wanted to tone it down. I thought there might be kids and stuff here, but the library. But this one is not. I decided if there was kids here, I was just going to read it, but there's not. So I'm going to just the first line. I'm going to be a little dramatic. So, but it's nothing really intense. It just comes out of it. It came out of thinking about the world and what's going on and. People seem to be sort of sometimes very negative and aggravated and agitated, and then there's all this beautiful stuff happening if you look for it. So that's how the poem came out of it. Let me know when you're ready. It's called Time to Choose. Time to Choose. Middle finger or peace sign? Coca-Cola or clean water? Republicans and Democrats or trees? Umpteen gender identities or every man, woman, child, and hermaphrodite? Melting pot or original people's lands? The horrors of war or horror movies? Plug-in diffusers or clean air? School shootings or common courtesy? Rapes or hugs? Fast food or simmer? Stuck in the mud or paradigm shift? The wrong side of the tracks or improvement of public transportation? Slave labor or looking forward to go to work? What are you doing? Or how do you feel? Food insecurity or more zucchini than you know what to do with? God Almighty or everyone? Stuck in the mud, the landslide, the tornado, the flooding, the drying lake, the scorched earth, or paradigm shift? Paradigm shift. Brother and sister, can you spare a paradigm shift? All right, this one, the other day somebody emailed me and they said snowflakes and something, and I was thinking about it, what did they mean by that? I'm supposed to think like no two snowflakes are alike? So I kept thinking about that, and then this poem happened.
Come back here.
Ready? It's called Snowflakes and Fireflies. They say no two snowflakes are alike, but there is no way to prove that. Think of all the blizzards. No way to check each one, even though scientists infer from what's been seen that no two are alike, yet no way to prove that. So what was the point anyway, that we're all alike but different? Yet what of raindrops, sandstorms, hail, dust and loose dirt in your eyes when the wind blows strong? What of bone dry days thirsting for liquid? Air soup thick with humidity, your hair curls, your breath wavers. Goosebumps on human skin when the air first autumn cools, or from a lover's heart of winter touch. And by the way, you can't step into the same river twice if you consider everything in motion. Nothing ever exactly the same, yet somehow strangely familiar. Unless your first time on your back in the wilderness, and there that fiery streak, all of a sudden, out of nowhere goes your first time seeing a shooting star. But even that, a memory. The light from so long ago, yet there, today, smack in your sky vision. Just before a firefly, they all look alike. Brings you closer to the earth, home, blinking light up into your eyes. Oh, that was quick. Quick ending. All right, I gotta sit this one. This is another one that kind of came out of thinking about what's going on in the world, and we get stuck in our heads and we get mean or competitive, and so this poem is my antidote.
Did you mention that it's in the key of F?
Oh yeah, and I asked because it's called Big Heart So Wide Open. In the chakra system, are people familiar with that? The energy centers in the body. The heart is the key of F. So after I wrote it, I was like, hey, can you play that key of F? So.
My reply was, of course.
So wide open. Put away your small mind and your tendency to size me up and then let me down. Come to me with your big heart. Your big heart like a sacred site. Your big heart so wide open, I'll confuse the throbbing for a valley with wild flowers and rolling hills. Put away your petty regrets and bloodthirsty, ever-starving ego, your false promises, blatant lies, and silent movie hooligans. In the deep quiet, I can hear them all. When limitless sky breathes easy after the rain, I can see everything. With bay waters rhythmically massaging the shore, the salt scent rising into June air, feel all. Come to me with your big heart, your heart like the courage to deal with stage fright. Your big heart so wide open, I won't know where the butterfly begins and the mountain ends. Come to me with your big heart so wide open, I won't know the difference between you and the forest, between me and the full moon. We won't know the difference between anything or anyone. A heart so big, embracing all. No favorite child, no bestseller, no agenda, no win my favor, simply equilibrium in this breeze, like the air in the lungs, the way the ocean hugs the shore. Hearts so big, no one knows where the sand ends and the breathing deeply of briny air begins. Midday sun touching every being's skin. That's why I've loved cello for a while, just because it always, whenever I hear cello, I just feel like it's a heart, it opens up, so. And you've been playing, did you tell me you've been playing since you were like 10?
Oh God, yeah. Wow. So basically my story is this, and I'm sticking to it. So I immigrated to this country. I ran away from war, basically, so I'm here under amnesty. And yeah, I don't think I've ever told you guys this. I found that out the hard way. And so there was war in my country, you know, way back when. So it has been war torn pretty much since in South America. And so we immigrated here We wound up, we landed in Queens Village, which all West Indian folks, I don't know, somehow immigrate there. It's just our hub, I guess. So we came here, we had a house, and we had nothing. So we slept on the floor. And as time went on, my grandparents worked, my father worked, everybody worked. And we managed to get furnishings for the house and things of that nature. And then one day, I see my grandfather's keyboard. And I just start playing on it. So he happens to hear me and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I don't know." He goes, "Are you sure you're not writing a song?" "Grandpa, I don't know." A few days goes by and then they go, "Marissa." So I come downstairs, I'm all excited. I'm thinking it's dinner time because my grandmother can cook very well, mind you. So I'm super excited about it. I smell food, but I get into the living room and there is a violin. I open this thing, I have no idea how to play it. I have no idea what these notes are, nothing. I have no musical training whatsoever. Apparently, music runs in my family. My grandfather was a tenor and apparently was a big deal back home. We used to have people from all over the world just visiting us. I never knew. I was just, these are my friends from the Netherlands. Oh, okay. You know, never paid any mind to it. Apparently I inherited his ear. So I learned how to play violin by ear. I was unable to read music for a long time until I entered this lovely school system that's here in Long Island. I was able to read and count and do all these things and play with people. I was so excited. Years later, I was like, "Oh, look, a viola." Learned how to play that and then learned how to play the cello. It's a natural progression. So I always try to keep myself learning and connecting with what is my voice. So it's nice to actually have all of these outlets. Oh, I feel a little violin-y today, or I feel a little cello-y today, or now, oh my goodness, there's an electric harp I can play. That's my story, and I am sticking to it.
You want to do another one or go to the next?
Yeah, I'll play a little more.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I've never heard that story, which is very similar to my process as a writer, because I write poems, essays, nonfiction, now I'm working on short stories, like whatever comes in, it somehow tells me it goes in this direction. So that's cool to hear it from a musical perspective.
I forgot I never told you guys that. So let me try a little more for you. Bach in the morning.
This is also a cool night for me because a friend of mine is here that we just reconnected after like 30 years, right?
Probably about 35 years.
We did when I lived in Colorado way back when, we met every week and we did workshops and poetry, and so that was like really helpful in honing the craft, as they say. And then I moved back east and I don't know what happened to him, and then like, I don't know, 6 months or a year ago, I lose track of time, I got an email, and we've had coffee a few times, and I invited him here tonight, so thanks for being here, Jim. And let's see, okay, I gotta do, this is the jazzy percussion one, right? Yeah. This one, if you know me, you know I like to joke around, so this is a humorous, I had to throw in a humorous poem. This is a true story. Everybody here knows Monet, the painter. So this is called Monet in the Men's Room. How much I appreciate it after driving many miles and tired from the previous night to pull into a Dunkin' Donuts and before getting a coffee to see up on the stark white walls of bare boredom a painting by Monet. A poster, of course. The white sails of small boats. Impressionist brush strokes. A touch of vision in what could have been just another public place to bemoan where the culture has gone. But instead, I can say I saw Monet in the men's room and left whistling. The evening sun spreading through the trees, lighting the dull road. The jazzy change of pace.
Sometimes you gotta jazz it up a little bit.
If we got a few more to do. This one is called Long Island, but I have to preface it by saying that part of the reason I wear this shell is because Shinnecock called Long Island, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but Sewanhaki. There's a high school called Sewanica. I don't know the official, but the Sewan is the purple shell. So it means shell place. So I like to, since I like to keep in touch with where I'm at and remind myself of the natural habitat, because it's easy to get in the car and drive on the concrete and LIE and sort of forget that there's water and shells around us. And the other one is for the native peoples call North America Turtle Island, but that's a whole longer story. So those two I like to wear. But the poem is called Long Island. I love this island stretching east from crowded city of my birth, through blessed indigenous people's terrain to oceans wailing past. Now goose and gull, sandpiper and plover guard the meandering shores, outward toward Atlantic, inward towns with winding side roads. Direct roots widening, though the land itself is lean, short distance, width of coast to coast, town to town quiescence with yard birds and local shops surviving amid a span of convenience, recognizable yet repetitively unfamiliar. Coastal winds, sea salt air, the art of your muscular body, your subtle godliness serving up libations and tasty treats for the familiar. East Coast whale remembers all, farmland anchor of potatoes, and all who traverse pine expanses. Now sun-picked grapes of rolling wineries soothe the spread of suburban sprawl. Ocean waves and rosy dawns move westward, infusing a charged gentleness, urging day to slow and simmer and remember a lighthouse for all to see. Yeah, from, I don't know if there's, I think there's maybe one or two maybe potato farms left. I don't know if anybody knows this. There used to be a lot of potato farms from what I know on Long Island. And obviously the Shinnecock hunted, they had the whale. It was a big deal, you know, lamp oils and stuff like that. And I think it was like fossil fuel maybe that, like the way computers did away with the typewriter or something like that. All right, now we're gonna go to the electric harp again. This one's called Spiral of Life. One of my guides in life is the spiral shell, like the snail shell or the
nautilus,
exactly. Part of the reason is because if you go in a circle, circles are nice, but if you go in a circle, you always wind up back where you started. So sometimes we go in circles and doing the same thing over and over again, but the spiral kind of goes, it's like seeing the same, you're sort of in the same place, but looking at it from a different angle. So that's why I like the spiral that way. So it's called Spiral of Life. The sun is a kite with a string to the heart, by day, by night. The robin's call strengthens at dusk. Migrating geese laugh over the ocean. The white eyeball of the moon emotes through space. Night spirals. The sky shades, turns, deepens. The geese are rowdy. A dog runs by the window panting, listening into the spiral, sipping hot tea in the backyard, looking into the spiral until we say, we've been here before, early this morning, when the neighbor's mower sent a spray of grass catching the light just this way. Up the poetry with haiku. Does everybody know what haiku is? It's the shortest form from Japan. It's become worldwide. It was popular, got popularized in the 1600s. I actually have a little book about haiku and I do classes. I've done classes here at this library. And whenever somebody gave me this as a birthday present many years ago, when I told people not to bring gifts, and somebody brought me this, and I am forever thankful, because aside from enjoying it, whenever I read the haiku, I accompany myself with this, so it's an extra treat with the harp. And it's also nice to have one of my neighbors, Lenny, is here. And quick side story, he put up a rock in his front yard. And I said, hey, that looks like a rock in a Zen garden. And he was like, what's that? So I told him briefly. And then a few days later, he goes, I researched it, and... okay, he had the sand, he got little rocks, He got a little bunch of little rocks instead of sand, and then he built like a little a Zen garden with the rock. And then I was in Port Jeff, and I went by a little store, and I went, and they had singing bowls. And I told him, and then the next day he went out and bought a singing bowl. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. So all right, we'll get to the haiku. Ready? Sunrise, songs, birds drinking the light. Summer's first rain, starling drinking from a roadside puddle. Rain on the windshield, the wipers keeping time to cool jazz. I like the way the street shines shiny black with the July rain. Dust on the ladle, July, and I haven't made soup for months. The space between us, in the air, the scent of wild roses. A pot of water boiling for corn, cool breeze on my face. Is it ocean or sky? I see in your eyes blue horizon. Rose of Sharon, surrounded by three neighbors' fences, belongs to the earth. What the butterfly showed me, earth, water, wind, sunlight, nectar. Build a home that no one can take away, the pure heart.
Super crazy, this is still going. That's really cool, makes me want one. Or several.
When I've done poetry readings, I'm like, oh, I hope people like the haiku, and they come up to me afterwards and like, do you know where I can get a singing bowl? I actually considered having them, and I could have sold 5 or 10, but oh well.
I love those. It's very clearing for the
yeah, it genre. Is, yeah. Some I did some class, and some yoga teacher came up to me and said it was very centering, this particular sound. And some of them are different energy, but you want to do one more?
Yeah.
A little Marissa.
Yeah, I do.
After a lot of words, back to the music and then to the silence.
Oh, yes. Without music, silence and music have to go together. You know that. One thing that somebody taught me when I was learning how to play a different genre, because classical is all about timing and it's very rigid, and especially as I started to venture outside of classical music, somebody told me something and I will never forget it. They said, Marissa, you are playing entirely too many notes. And I went, all right. can you fault me? You know, especially when you're playing as a soloist, that's all we do. It's notes all day long, and that's what they expect from you. But as I went to go play, my friend goes, you got the ear, why don't you go play a little jazz with us? I went, oh God, no. I have to play things without sheet music for the first time? Okay. So after this, he said, I want you to hear something, because he knows that I'm a classical musician. He goes, you see all of this? Sounds nice, but sometimes you need to let it breathe. Okay? And I think the same is true with poetry and everything else too. Without sound, with sound needs to come silence. And when we teach kids this, we teach this side by side. Here's a quarter note, which is a one beat of sound, and a quarter rest, which is one beat of silence. Make sure you're counting.
Is that like one of my favorites is Thelonious Monk, because his jazz is like so many
notes,
spaces, yeah,
so little time. But you know what, it's one of those things where it's like, when you really think about it, you want to hear the other stuff. It's not just about the melody itself. She's a bit of a complainer. Some kids just are. Some kids are, we love you. Other kids are like, you will never believe what happened to me today. I hate everything. So, it's true. So I said to her, I was like, every time you do this, I'm going to play something every time. I think about the movie Titanic. It's a shame what just happened, but you know. But I think of it this way. You feel like the world is just coming down And it's my signal to her, hey, listen, things aren't so bad, right? So I play the last thing that the musicians played before the whole boat sank. But this is what happens, fun with music. So sometimes, especially when you're feeling it as a musician, the whole point is that it should be able to come out of you organically. That's the point of being a musician. Otherwise, you're a technician. So this last thing that I'm gonna play for you, I actually wrote it a long time ago. And the story behind it is, well, you know my story already, but you know, as circumstances change, I begin to write music as an outlet. And my only regret is that my computer was destroyed because I never actually got a chance to publish this. So I'm gonna play a little bit for you. This is my second cello symphony. And it basically was just my view on the world. You might hear a little Bach in there, a la, right? I studied a lot of that when I was younger. You might hear a couple of things that you may be, oh, that's a little piece of this. It's happy, I promise.
Thank you.
Thanks, that's Marissa Sova, and thank you very much all for listening.
That was great.
Thank you. So much fun.
Thank you guys so much for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was scratching my instrument.